Welcome to the Tales of Long Box podcast. This is episode 200 and hold on, where'd it go? There it is. Too many windows open. Episode 296, Spotlight on Marvel Comics, X-Men Gold, number one. And I am Chris Mosby.
Oh, hey, I guess that's my turn. I'm Caleb Girard. Sorry.
No, that's fine.
And I'm Murray Fox.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's start off. As it says, I said in the title, we're going to be covering the X-Men Gold number one, which is the gold team of the X-Men, part of the whole resurrection thing that Marvel is doing. And we covered the Inhumans versus X-Men thing, and that was an excuse to restart all the titles yet again. This time, as I said in the past, I've kind of missed the X-Men, reading it as a kid. That was one of my three that when I really started heavy duty into comics collecting, there was three titles that I started. There was the New Teen Titans, which was number 29, which is right before Tara joined. She still had that funky headdress outfit. Legion of Superheroes, and I'd bought them off and on as a kid, but this is when I really got into it, and I think it was Legion of Superheroes number 294. It was the very last issue of the Great Darkness Saga, which I went back and got the rest of those, the one where Darkseid's there and everybody's on their knees with their arms up doing the thing. And then it was an Uncanny X-Men, and I don't remember the issue, but it was the one where Wolverine was standing over what looked like a dead body of Kitty Pryde. So all three of those
got... Ooh, that was started. The Brood story. Was that the Brood storyline?
I think it was around in there. It was the first time I saw Mystique. I'd have to look that up, but those were the three that got me big time heavy into collecting comics. I kind of, you know... We've talked about this years and years ago. I started reading comics when I was a kid. I'd figure out what was going on in the pictures, and my mom and dad would, they'd take me, my dad, what they called a newsstand back then, before there were comic shops, would go and get me more comics, and that's actually how I learned to read. I learned to read before I was in kindergarten, actually. So... And it was from comic books, and that's what started it all. And here we are, years and years later. And, yeah, started back up. Yeah, so,
that was a Paul Smith cover. It was at Uncanny X-Men 177.
That's it. That's the one I remember. That's what got me hooked. And I think, I don't know when... The X-Men and Teen Titans crossover came into that. That might have been first, and those were the two issues of Teen Titans and X-Men, Uncanny X-Men, that I started reading after that. So that might be come before that. I'd have to look that up. Because I read that, and I was a fan of Robin, you know, Dick Grayson, and I probably read that first. And then the next two issues of those series that came out, you know, yeah, that's it. I think that's it. Anyway, that's kind of why we don't have a Legion. We kind of got the Titans are back in various forms. New Teen Titans and Rebirth. And now we kind of got a restarting of the X-Men. And some of my favorite X-Men are in there, too. Good to see Rachel Gray in there. So, yeah, that's kind of why I'm excited about this and enjoyed it. And in the back was a wonderful section of everything that's happened. Covered all the stuff that I read. And, you know, I might even write a blog post of where you can get those collected, those particular pages that they talk about. But anyway, it's kind of weird to be excited about a Marvel comic. But anyway, along that lines, I wanted to say all that because there will be spoilers ahead. And I'll be covering this issue, and also we'll talk about a little controversy, which the other members of the podcast haven't heard about. I kind of accidentally saw it in my RSS feed. So here's the first stuff. This was like yesterday or day before.
Dateline, 2017.
Yeah, yes, ooh. Exactly. This is reported on CBR.com. And this is, there was a, okay, here we go. Marvel response to X-Men Gold artist controversy. Here we go. Following discovery of controversial and highly charged religious and political messages placed in the newly released X-Men Gold number 1 by series artist Ardian Sayaf, Marvel has issued a statement on the situation to comicbook.com. So this is a regurgitation of another website. Which I'm glad it was explained, because I remember reading it and seeing a couple of things, especially what was written on Colossus's shirt when playing it softball. Didn't understand it, and this is why. It was a hidden message. Here we go. And they quote, as the quoted as saying, the mentioned artwork in X-Men Gold number one was inserted without knowledge behind its reported meanings, the publisher said. These implied references do not reflect the views of the writer, editors, or anyone else at Marvel, and are in direct opposition of Direct opposition of the inclusiveness of Marvel Comics and what the X-Men have stood for since their creation. The artwork will be removed from subsequent printings, digital versions, and trade paperbacks, and disciplinary action is being taken. Although it is not yet known what type of disciplinary action will be taken against Sayaf, the statement is notable for both the swiftness in which Marvel has responded on a Saturday, hours after the X-Men Gold art became a major talking point on social media, and the definitive condemnation of the implied statements in the issue. CBR has reached out to Marvel for further content, and it shows pictures here. If you read the issue, and we'll get to that, there's a scene towards the end where they're playing softball, and any fan of X-Men knows, even as far probably, I think Claremont started that, which he's going to be at Planet Comic Con, and I'm looking forward to getting something signed by him. On his shirt is the letters QS, and then a 5 colon 51. It is apparently a thing from the Quran, a statement from the Quran, and it roughly translated, it says, "Oh, you have believe, do not take the Jews and the Christians as allies. They are in fact allies of one another, and whoever is an ally to them among you, then indeed he is one of them. Indeed Allah guides not the wrongdoing people." And somebody quoted at Marvel, "I thought X-Men would have stood for inclusiveness." That's when it came up. I guess it was tweeted on somebody tweeted it early on Sunday, which I believe early on Saturday, so that would have to be, I guess, this Saturday, since it came out this week. We're quickly spread on social media following the discovery of multiple subtly placed messages in the X-Men Gold number 1 art that referenced protests against Basuka Tajaja Purnama, a Christian, and the current governor.
Easy for you.
Yes, exactly.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah, I'm having trouble talking all the way around today. It might be because I've been in 47 meetings in the last week.
Awesome.
Yesterday was my 7th day in a row of working. I did not get a weekend off.
7th day?
Yes. Anyway, that's a whole nother complaint and a whole nother podcast that may or may not be done later. Anyway, this guy's the current governor of Jakarta, the capital of the Republic of Indonesia. Sayaf, who is Indonesian, drew X-Men character Colossus wearing a t-shirt reading QS5551, meaning Quran Surah 551, a verse of the Quran, which is, like I said, translated, Bleeding Cool translated it in an Indonesian as Muslims should not appoint the Jews and Christians as their leader. The Quran.com translate reads, which I just got through saying. Additionally, in a group seen earlier in the issue, the numbers 212 and 51 are seen on the storefront on a civilian's t-shirt, respectively. 212 refers to a real-life protest on December 2nd, 2016, where an estimated 200,000 Indonesians marched against Purnama for alleged blasphemy against the Quran during a speech. 51 is a reference to the QS 551 passage. When questioned by fans about the inclusion of these messages, Saif responded on his Facebook page in Indonesian. Although Google Translate hasn't provided a completely reliable translation, the message appears to have been Saif acknowledging the political nature of the hidden messages. So, it goes on. Since around the issue proliferated, it's been widely noted that the mutants of the X-Men have served as parables for minority groups since their creation in 1963 by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, thus increasing the perceived inappropriateness of using characters for a message against the minority Christian and Jewish populations in Indonesia. Additionally, X-Men Gold features Kitty Pryde, a Jewish character. Dude, are you all right? Murray?
Yeah. Are you okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
All right, man. Sound like you're climbing.
Nope, I'm just sitting here.
Okay, all right. Okay. All right, sounds like you're, you know, lifting something heavy or having a heart attack or something. I don't know. All right. Okay, anyway, let's see. Kitty Pryde is Jewish, taking command of an X-Men team for the first time in her history, while Nightcrawler, canonically a staunch Catholic and former priest, which I didn't realize that until the end of this issue where they talk about that. X-Men Gold number 1, a flagship title of Marvel's Resurrection, launch of the X-Men and Inhuman titles, was released on Wednesday. And there's another typo. With no connection initially made by readers to any real-life political or religious statements. The writer of the series, Mark Guggenheim, which is himself Jewish, responded to the situation on Saturday by linking to comicbook.com's report on a Marvel statement via Twitter and simply stating, please read. And I think I read somewhere else, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby were both also Jewish, supposedly. I could be wrong about that. Saif is currently solicited as the interior artist for the first four issues of X-Men Gold. Artists R.B. Silva and Ken Lashley are already scheduled to contribute to the twice-monthly series, with Silva solicited as the artist of June's issues 5 and 6. X-Men Gold number 2 is scheduled for release on April 19th. Keep reading CBR for the latest feature of the series and Seraph's position at Marvel. Now, the next thing of it was just a little bit ago, right before we started the podcast. Apparently this artist, Adrian Seoff, has addressed the controversy, and he is insisting that he does not hate Christians or Jews. Let's see, this report goes on, and he basically said, these implied references, okay, wait a minute, in his social media exchange, Saif confirmed the numbers in X-Men Gold to the December protests and to the Purnama's alleged blasphemy. I told all Marvel the truth, meaning of the number, he wrote. Let's see how Marvel will react. Okay. Probably not very well. And then another report on X-Men Gold on CBR.com, which we'll go over later, is characters at the end of the issue. So, what, gentlemen, thoughts on this? Thoughts, comments, don't care.
Well, to quote G. Willow Wilson, mm-hmm. About Adrian Saif, he has committed career suicide, and he will rapidly become irrelevant.
Yeah, I believe so too. You don't do that kind of thing, especially. I mean, around here. Yeah, that's not good.
That's my only opinion. He will.
I agree totally.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a time and a place, and he shouldn't do it in a. He shouldn't have done it here. If he has those opinions, put it in his own book somewhere, someplace.
Yeah,
self-published somewhere.
Website or whatever. So.
Yes.
I agree. Yeah, that. Because I remember reading that. I didn't catch all the other crap, but that thing on Colossus's shirt was very prominent. And I'm like, what the hell does that mean? I thought it was some take on that John 3:16 thing that you see all the time from the book. I was like, you know.
And you can have a rainbow wig on next issue.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, so anyway, that was an interesting thing. So let's get started with this.
You have no opinion, Murray. Nothing.
I think
I don't know enough about the issue. Like
you haven't read it yet. Well, I mean,
no, I mean I don't know enough about the political. Like, I'm dumb about that stuff. I know nothing. So
yeah, I'll point it out when we get to it.
No, I saw it. Like, yeah. I mean, I know the part, but I don't get the issues around it, so I can't. I don't know.
You're going to withhold until you've had an opportunity to digest all of the 5,000 Facebook posts that'll be about it, right?
You there, Murray? I think you dropped.
Am I back?
Yes, you are back, sir.
I think I hit a button.
You hit a button?
I might have hit a button.
All right, you're back. Okay, so.
Anyway, I don't know nothing about the issue.
It's cool.
He was trying to protest, and this is going to, like, I agree with what he said, Caleb, sorry.
You know him.
Yeah, that guy.
The other guy.
it is.
Eddie, I'm diving in.
Yeah. It is not appropriate to put there. All right, so we start off this issue. We are looking at the Fact Channel. With Lydia Nance of the Heritage Initiative Director, which is I think it's just another term for the wonderful Fox News and their usually racist views. So this chick starts out talking. She's got gray hair, looks a little bit on the older side, not your typical news anchor. Why does the world hate and fear mutants? I've often had occasion to wonder. In a world of inhumans as guardians, Spider-Man and women, and all manner of enhanced individuals, what particular threat do mutants pose? The answer is the X-genome. Mutants are the only phylum that spontaneously enhances. The X-genome is a ticking evolutionary time bomb. Sounds like a little like you're splitting hairs, Miss Nance, trying to justify what some would characterize as racial prejudice. And we're back to this is one of the things that drew me to mutants when I was a kid. I was always bullied and picked on due to various things, you know, being too smart or overweight or, you know, insert whatever here. And one of the reasons I was so drawn to the X-Men is because they were persecuted the same way I thought I was, at least. I felt like I was when I was a kid. So that's kind of why they've always been one of my favorites. Even, you know, I divested myself of them for quite a while. But anyway, back to that. Racial prejudice is based on aesthetic distinction, skin color, or epicanthic folds, for example. Okay. What I'm talking about is a condition that creates HMDs, human beings of mass destruction. Now you can dismiss these concerns as prejudiced, there's air quotes there, or bigoted, but I can weather such accusations, just let me assure you. My organization is hell-bent on protecting the world at whatever cost. Now we see the two-page spread. It's a really cool. And you got Kitty Pryde standing there, tears in her costume, hair's all messed up, kind of like the short hair. And she's saying, to me, my X-Men, which if you're really an old fan of the X-Men, that's what Professor Sex, Professor Sex. Oh, Jesus.
Woo!
Whoa, hey, God, oh, cut that out. What the professor?
He did live in a house with a bunch of kids.
Yeah,
come on,
you know. Professor X used to say all the time, even way back in the 60s, let's see, for a better, Old Man Logan, which we'll get to that later, he's from the actual alternate universe after Secret Wars, and yada, yada, yada. Anyway, that's Old Man Logan. He's not in a uniform. Everybody else is. And he says, always wanted to say that, haven't you? And she says, like you have no idea. I love that. That's a great shot. Very cool. Anyway, so then we go to this page. X-Men Gold, previously in X-Men. Genetically gifted with uncanny abilities, mutants are believed to be the next stage of human evolution. Now, see, this is old hat for you people that have been reading the X-Men for a long time, but it's kind of good to see it. While the world hates and fears them, Kitty Pryde has reformed the team of mutant heroes known as the X-Men to use their powers for good and spread a positive image of mutant kind. Now, see, that's kind of one of the reasons why I like that. They're, one of the reasons I stopped reading all the X-Men stuff is, like most Marvel books, is everybody became a gray area. Not really heroes, not really villains, just kind of in the middle. And this changes this, and it's got a roll call. You got Kitty Pryde, Storm, Nightcrawler, Colossus, and apparently Rachel Gray has changed her name to Prestige. She actually has a code name. And then you have Old Man Logan. Next up, and this is one of my, this is my favorite line from this entire book, I think. So they're all standing there, and Prestige, which is Rachel Gray, which that's a long story. Maybe we'll get to that later. She says, isn't Terrax supposed to be dead? And old Marvel fans would know that Terrax is an ex Herald of Galactus, so cosmic power level. And he's standing there with his big axe. Apparently, he has an axe to grind. Hey! Anyway.
You're fired.
Yeah, I know. She said, she says, isn't Terrax supposed to be dead? Colossus said, so was I. Nightcrawler goes, me too. And Old Man Logan says, I hear there's a me that still is. Well, that's one of my I just love that. Anyway. I was kind of hoping an Avenger or a Champion or two would have shown up to give us a hand by now. Logan says, quit your whining, call the play, boss. She says, our ground game's not working, most likely because Terrax controls the ground, Nightcrawler says. Exactly, that's his power, and that's why we're going to put the ball in the air. And she says, Storm and Prestige, that stony, take Stony Face for a little ride on it, which it's weird seeing Oro taking orders. But if you read the X-Men, was it X-Men Prime? I think it was. Oro wanted to quit. She went to Kitty. Kitty had quit X-Men again, apparently. I didn't know she had quit again, but at one point she had quit. Was living in Chicago and just doing stuff. And Kitty, we covered X-Men Prime, didn't we? Yes, we did. Okay, listen to that episode. Anyway, Oro said, I'm going to quit, and would you please come back and lead the team? And she said yes, and her first order was, Oro, you can't go. So that's what's going on. So they're back up there, and they pulled him up with a tornado, and, you know, holding, and Prestige says, good job, Oro. Thank you. Can you hold him aloft for a moment? No problem. What's your plan? And then she hits him with a big old lightning bolt. And Prestige says, good plan. Kitty's going on. Peter, I need you at the base of the building. Hold it up for as long as you can. Nightcrawler, can you port me and Logan up to the roof? And he goes, yes, and bamf. But may I ask why? Because Logan's going to jump from here to help Storm and Prestige. I am? That's funny. And I'm going to phase it. This is cool. I'm going to phase the building so it doesn't destroy the whole block when it falls. He goes, guess I am. And he jumps up there and gets in the tornado, and he's slashing and dicing like he likes to do. And she says, "Your turn, Fuzzy." She's on her knees and with her hands on the ground. Your turn, Fuzzy Elf. Teleport any stragglers out of the building. You're going to phase an entire skyscraper. Try not to sound so skeptical, she says. And then you see,
and this that harkens back to when she Joss Whedon kind of, not, I wouldn't say amped up her powers, but yeah, showed that she had that kind of potential when she phased that bullet. Yes. When they supposedly, when they quote unquote killed her off at the end of the Joss Whedon run.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good run, too, by the way. I bought that on a lark. I don't, just because he wrote it and I loved it, I ended up getting all the trades. And of course, right after I bought all the trades, they put out a deluxe edition and a hardcover, but I didn't buy it anyway. Which seems to be the theme these days. I buy some, I just got the last trade of this, and oh, Omnibus, damn you. Anyway, Terrax, money,
sons of bitches.
Yeah, Terrax is, Logan just slashed his axe into pieces. Terrax is being all monologue-y, and he's saying, "You think you can vanquish me?" Vanquish. See, that's a villain kind of word right there. Not, he didn't say defeat me or beat me. He said vanquish me by moving the battle to the sky. The ground is mine to command. It follows me. I am Tyros the Terrible. I am Terrax the Tamer. I am, and then he gets his, yeah, out cold because Prestige nails him with some stuff. And Colossus is at the base of the skyscraper doing his Superman thing. Gotcha. I cannot hold it any longer. He has to go to the bathroom really bad. No, I mean, he's holding on to the skyscraper. All of a sudden you see a bamf and the Nightcrawler disappears. And she goes, "That's okay, Peter. I've got this." And you see this big, huge one-page thing. And it's kind of sad that that guy did that, what he did with the political crap, because he's actually a pretty good artist. I like this art. So anyway, and she literally phases an entire skyscraper, and it would have hit another one. So you see this thing, and it's like about at a 45-degree angle from the ground, and she's on top of it, and it's phasing through another building. That's what you see. That's freaking amazing.
Comic book physics.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a cool idea, but then, like, what happens when it's on the ground?
Well, like, I would imagine she followed all the way through the ground.
Because so she's taking the building into the ground?
Yes, I would have.
Like, she's not just leaving it on the pavement where it's gonna cause havoc. She brought it, like, down into the...
Well, she would have had to, because if she stopped at the ground, then it would still be half-phased into that other building, right?
Yeah.
And that causes issues, I believe, doing that kind of thing. Because she comes up out of the ground.
It's a cool concept conceptually. I think it's kind of neat, but you know, a lot of times these things don't actually stop at the ground. Mm-hmm. They have basements or sub basements. Plus, there's a bunch of stuff that the city is doing under the earth.
Yeah,
like New York. New York goes down like what, half a mile, mm-hmm, or something like that.
She's got to bring it way down.
She's gonna have to do something, yeah. Which, if you didn't listen to our X-Men Prime coverage, or you haven't read that, they moved which they'll capture on that. They're based in New York now because they have moved the school right smack dab in the center of Central Park. So that's why they're in New York. So, and you see the rest of the team, Nightcrawler's there. He says, "I'm not entirely certain. I was somewhat preoccupied with evacuating the building, but I think..." And then Colossus says that Katja just phased a skyscraper and rolled it down. Oh, hey, I tried to do an accent, and that was terrible. Sorry about that. Oro says, "Where's Kitten?" Which I wouldn't want to be called that if I was a leader of the X-Men, but hey, you know. So they're standing there. looking all heroic, and old man Logan says, "Heads up, people, it's our adoring public." And I believe it's Prestige that says, "You know, if the Avengers or the Champions were here, they'd be cheering right now." Which is interesting that she's mentioning the Champions, because aren't they all kids? That's Mark Waid's Champions, right? I think.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yep.
So Nightcrawler says, "But the Avengers and the Champions aren't here." Anybody seen Kitty? And all of a sudden you see her kind of come out of the ground, phase up, her feet are still there. "I really could use a beer." And then old man Logan says, "You have any idea how old it makes me feel hearing you talk like that?" And she says, "Yes, excuse me, folks." She's standing there talking. And this is one of those scenes where you have that, the crowd, you see one of those, Murray dropped again. He's dropping like a hot potato. Come back to us, Murray. It's probably all that heavy. Oh, there he is. Are you back?
I'm back.
All right, good. Good, I'm glad. All that heavy breathing's got us worried, man. All right, anyway.
Well, you'll notice that there's the 212, but also on that guy's t-shirt, who's standing right in front of the 51. So.
Yeah, so there's all these people who are sitting out there. And she says, "My name is Kitty Pride. I know I should have a code name, but I don't. I guess I'm a little indecisive, even after all these years," she kind of says quietly to herself. "I'm the X-Men's leader. I just want to make sure everyone is okay." The little girl says, "I'm okay." And then the lady says, "Don't talk to it, dear." It, really? Sorry, mutant, homo superior, enhanced and individual, whatever the politically correct term for your kind is these days. Boy, that really reflects the way things are these days after a certain individual is elected into office, I think. All those people that kept their mouth shut, they're not afraid to speak their mind anymore.
So here we go. I'm going to...
Yes, jump in.
Devil's advocate moment here, okay?
Yes.
So it's okay for Mark Guggenheim to subtly throw in these anti-Trump references... And such. You know me. I'm not pro Trump. I mean,
yes,
I am.
I know
I'm,
exactly. That's fine.
Okay. So, but basically, by disciplining Adrian Saif for his ignorant posts about, from the Quran, the 212 and the S-51 or whatever that, the 551 stuff.
Right.
He's going to get disciplined. But Mark Guggenheim can diss very, very, and not so subtly. Approximately 35% of the United States population. Just
fair
checking.
Enough. Fair enough.
Yep. All right.
Yeah, but.
Go ahead.
It's his story to tell, right? So he's chosen to tell that story, and the editors have chosen to run it. Whereas Ardian just placed stuff in the background without. Do you know what I mean? Like it's one. Is a conscious storytelling choice, and one is a sneaky.
Right.
Marvel said yes to one, but not yes to the other.
Exactly. Yeah. But my butt is one. Right or wrong, or whether you're for him or against him, it's okay. It's cool to do that right now. I see in my news feeds every week how SNL has roasted him over the coals.
Sure.
Twitter sued the government for trying to make them reveal the identity of a anti-Trump person that was spouting stuff because it, hurt his feelings and things like that. And, I mean, whether you agree with that or not, it's cool to do that right now. And then the other thing is, some of the way this is done is exactly the way things, maybe not what that lady said about the politically correct term for your kind, but that's the X-Men, when I started reading it, it had that all the way through it. It didn't point its way to any individual, though, but so anyway. You have a good point, though. No, you're
again,
right. Devil's advocate.
I'm not defending. Just curious. Okay, and I think you're right that Marvel knew what they were printing with the Guggenheim stuff, but they didn't know what they were printing with the Sayaf stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, and if you ever follow, if you ever look at anybody's comic book creator Twitter feed, about 90% of them are against Trump anyway.
Sure, yeah. And the ones that aren't are very vocal. There's the Ethan Van Scrivers and I don't even know who else. But
So anyway, so she's...
Oh, right. Sorry. Okay.
No, hey, that's perfectly fine. So she's she stands there and kind of scowls at this lady and says, I think the word you're searching for is person, human being, even if you're feeling charitable. But I see that you're not. I know it's a long way back. You never exactly trusted us, and I know things are different after our war with the Inhumans. I know that. And I know that to the extent you ever trusted us, we have a long way to go to rebuild that trust. But we're starting today. So now we go to the... Oh, I thought that was closer to the end, but I was wrong. We go to the...
And you actually... You know what? You kind of... You skipped over that one panel where she says...
Oh.
But I see you're not, and she... And then Kitty Pryde says, and surprisingly, I understand, because she gets it. She gets why they...
Yes,
I mean, she doesn't agree with them, but she gets it.
Yes, so. Surprisingly, I understand. Yeah, I didn't go that far over.
They're understandably scared of mutants, but to be fair, they should be also as scared of Inhumans. They should also be as scared of Iron Man and Captain America.
Yeah, they are convenient scapegoats, unfortunately.
Yes.
So okay, we move on. Xavier Institute for Mutant Education and Outreach, it's called now, in Central Park. So we have a wonderful, another double page spread. And in the earlier panel, Logan had said something in a meanwhile, look, hell of a speech, Pride. And he says, very Xavier. And she says, thanks. Wasn't necessarily a compliment. You haven't changed a bit, Logan. Not true. I've gotten grumpier. So you see Nightcrawler and a bunch of others. I think maybe that's Kid Omega there with the purple hair and on the sides. And they're playing, I don't know, baseball, softball? Probably, no, baseball, overhand throw.
Okay. Baseball, overhand, yes. Yeah.
And you see Colossus is there, and he's about to hit a ball, and that's where you see one of the things that was brought up, the QS5, colon 5-1. Right there, and I remember looking at that and I'm like, what the holy hell is that? So you see a couple of panels there, and you got Nightcrawler does a teleport thing to catch the ball, and Peter is whatever happened to the rule about not using powers? They always do that, though. It seems funny. And then Oral's walking up. What happened to many things, I'm often compelled to ask. And then he says something in Russian, which apparently was the beginning of the phrase, the more they stay the same, because she finishes it. Whoever coined that particular phrase must have been a mutant. And you see him playing some more. And then Logan and Old Man Logan are talking. And he says, I always thought these games were a waste of time, but I was wrong. Is that you, Mystique? Because there's no way. Oh, and he's like, cute. But I'm serious. Softball's normal. And normal's always been in short supply for this outfit. It's like gold. Logan, are you getting sentimental in your old age? Tell anybody and I'll gut you. And then the guy walks up in a suit. Excuse me. Which is always a bad sign. And even in real life, if somebody with a suit walks up. So just run the other direction. That's my suggestion. Anyway, he says, I'm looking for Catherine Pryde. My name is Alex Sandstrom. I'm with the mayor's office, the city register specifically. And she says, Kitty, can I help you? So, okay, blah, blah, blah. And this is kind of a neat exchange, but he says, very glad your community recluttered here to Central Park. Logan's kind of says in a low voice, didn't give you much of a choice. Logan, just flame and teleported in. Logan, whole school, just invited ourselves. How can I build you? Anyway. So basically, he hands her a big thing of paperwork, and it's an invoice for the first 6 months lease for being in Central Park. And she says, this is for $18 million. And he says, a very smug look on his face, this is Central Park, arguably the most valuable residential real estate in the entire world. And she's looking at the stuff. And he looks over, want me to climb?
Yeah, so wait a minute. Yeah. So they teleport the building in. What about the plumbing?
I don't know. Apparently.
What about the electricity?
I don't know. Man, how long have you been reading comics again?
I know. Stop it.
Cut it out, man. Anyway, yeah, no, you're right. And why is there?
I know I'm right.
Why is there crystal hanging out of one of the buildings? I don't.
It's ice.
Is that ice? Okay. Why isn't it melted?
Because it's ice, baby.
Okay. We're back to you got Nightcrawler is watching TV and
with their stolen electricity.
Yes, stolen electricity. Well, apparently they're going to end up.
They probably stole cable too.
Yeah, they're going to have to pay for that eventually. So Storm's standing behind Nightcrawler. He's watching that racist chick on Fall News.
From the first page, yeah.
Yes, from the first page, and they're talking about. You know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. And she starts talking about, but there's another epigram I've been considering, Kurt, one favored by Magneto, The Past is Prologue. I'd appreciate you not quoting Magneto of all people. It's Shakespeare, in fact, but what do you mean by it? That perhaps we're returning to our roots, our history, perhaps all the trials and tragedies, we are returning to what we were. Outcasts? She says heroes. That's what I've liked about what they're doing here. Why Aurora, that actually sounded hopeful. Have I really been that bad lately? Kitty told me you tried to leave a team. I led the X-Men into war, Kurt, a losing one. The X-Men doesn't lose, my dear. And then, you know, listen to what, didn't we? Listen to that. So, we're in the Danger Room, and Prestige is out there. With a couple of other kids. One of them's called Armor. I don't know what the other one's name is, but he was in
Rockslide. He's Rockslide.
Yeah, he was in a title called Young X-Men. I remember reading that for 2 minutes when it was out there. Danger Room version 10.3, combat training. So they're in there, and she's fighting. Santo, I could use some help here. Do I look like I'm napping here? And he's getting his butt kicked by some robot. And she's got something flying after her. And
batarangs.
Batarangs. Yeah, batarangs look like it. So she uses
copyright infringement.
Yes. She's uses her ability to take them out with her telekinesis. And boom, nice. I like the cape, very superhero-y. So anyway, they explode the things that are attacking, and Rockslide says, "Now that was just showing off." Yes, extremely impressive, Miss Gray. Please, Hisako, it's Rachel, or Prestige if you prefer. New code name? It's Kitty's idea. Color me surprised. That girl changes code names the way other people change socks. Kitty thought Phoenix and Marvel Girl were too rooted in the past. She wants me looking forward. From what I've seen, she wants that for all of us. For real. I don't know how it happened, but I'm glad she's in charge. So she's sitting there, and she's at Professor X's desk with the title Headmaster on it, and she's looking through a big stack of papers, and she is thinking to herself, maybe it's not too late to go back to the Guardians of the Galaxy, or trapped inside a bullet traveling through space. That was fun. I even settled for being an immortal demon ninja's psychic puppet right about now. Those are little hints to her history if you didn't know them. This used to be your deal, Professor. I think of you a lot, almost every day. I survived the experience. Somebody walks in, that's Peter, because he says, Katya, do you have a minute? Just had to go and jinx myself, didn't I? And there's a very awkward exchange. Colossus has ordered some pizza, like she likes, Chicago style. And it was kind of obvious that, you know, he wants to take up their romance. Pardon me, my nose is running like crazy. I better catch it. Anyway, she said, you know, he's like, hey, you want to join me for the pizza? And she goes, no. I mean, as friends, sure, always, no problem. But you didn't mean as friends, right? And he says, is it ever that simple with us? No. I love you, Peter. I always will. But I've moved on. I'm sorry. And he says, if there's any kind of God it's at all, someone will attack the city right now. Someone's attacking the city. Somebody runs in. Great. Now I feel like the worst person ever. See, I like her. She's humble, at least. Oh, it was Rachel that I ran in. And she's putting on what counts as a mask these days. Just lines on your face. So I see she's still hiding the hound marks, which they talk about. So what did I interrupt between you and Peter? Don't really want to talk about it, Rachel. You remember I'm telepathic, right? You remember I could phase my pinky into your eye socket and solidify, right? I love that. She goes, testy. What's happening? Someone is attacking the United Nations building, a 5-person unit, according to SHIELD intel. Rachel, pull the information from Oro's memory and download us all en route. Kurt, you're driving. So there's the Blackbird. And they're all loading onto the thing. And they get their United Nations headquarters, Manhattan. There's a big hole in the United Nations headquarters. Oh, my goodness. And that's not good. It's not a good sign. So let's see. Kitty is giving orders. Rachel, Oro, fly to the center of the building. Take Peter with you and see if he can stabilize it. Kurt, you're porting me and Logan to ground level so we can assess the situation. And Logan says, what's to assess? Someone ripped a big flaming hole in the place. SHIELD mentioned a 5-man team. I want to meet them. So they bamf down, and then you see, bum-ba-bum, wish granted, Kostian. Who are these jokers? And you see these 5 guys, which there's a wonderful thing on CBR that explains who those are, which I wasn't sure. It's not obvious, Grandpa. We're the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. And you see some demon-looking thing. You got yourself. Pyro is recognizable. Avalanche looks recognizable. You got somebody in a cloak. And the chick that said, Grandpa, we're the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. That looks like Magma, which I thought, wasn't she a good guy? And then you got some demon-looking thing standing behind him, which I thought might be a brood, but whatever. So that brings us on to the next section. Who are those people? There's a spoiler warning, a explanation of who those people are in who they think that they are, actually, in CBR article. They're talking about this in a new flagship series, blah, 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 blah. Here we go. X-Men's 81, X-Men's number 141, the shape-shifting Mystique Major made a move against the X-Men, which she debuted her lineup of Evil Mutants. I used to have that. See, that was another thing. I used to have like a huge collection of Uncanny X-Men. I sold them years ago. So here's who they think it is. And while none of these characters are named in issue, 4 of the 5 mutants bear at least a strong resemblance to characters we already know. You got the guy in the left hand side, which looks like Pyro.
Pyro's dead. Pyro's dead. Now?
I did not know that. See, I haven't read this yet.
No. Pyro died in he died of the legacy virus or whatever that AIDS thing that what all the mutants had.
That's what this says. The flamethrowing mutant is pretty much synonymous with the team. Pyro debuted in X-Men number 141 as a member of Mystique's Brotherhood, then stayed with the team as it transitioned into its role as the government-sanctioned Freedom Force. I remember that. Even stuck it out and served on Toad's Brotherhood in the early 90s. If this is Pyro, it's a big deal for X-Men fans. Despite his status as a major villain for almost 20 years, Pyro was one of the few characters to actually stay dead. Character died way, way, way back in 2001's Cable 87. He returned to life briefly in 2010's Necrotia event, but he hasn't been seen since. Interesting. There's also another possibility. This could be ex-New Mutant Rusty Collins. Key thing about Pyro is that he's not he's not able to create flame, but he can only control it. In this image, it looks like the flames are coming out off of Pyro's hands. Yes, it does. You don't see that thing on his back that's actually a flamethrower. A power that Rusty Collins possesses. If this is Rusty, that's even a bigger deal because he's been dead since 1995. Well, holy crap. That's not a far-fetched theory either. Guggenheim has shown an affinity for the X-Men's of the 80s, what with Rachel Gray's return to prominence. I've always liked that character. Rachel Gray's one of my favorites. And a solicit text implies that they are friends, plural, on the Brotherhood team. Okay. And the next one, Avalanche, it looks like. It looks like his outfit. Ground Shaking Mutant debuted along Pyro in X-Men number 141 and also served on a team in the 80s for a while. Avalanche and Pyro were a package deal and best buds with the Brotherhood. He later joined Exodus' short-lived Brotherhood and then retired to a life of bartending. Avalanche retirement didn't last for long as the Red Skull captured the evil ex-mutant and brainwashed him into doing evil deed once again. I remember that. The mission ended with Avalanche's death and hasn't been seen since 2012. Uncanny Avengers number one. If this is Avalanche, that means a thought dead character has returned after a 5-year... God, a whole 5 years ago. Similar to the Pyro is really a Rusty theory. Let's not count out the possibility that this Avalanche could be Richter, a similarly earthquake-causing mutant that's also been at MIA for a while. Richter actually got some attention earlier this year when he appeared on the big screen in Logan. Oh, that's right, yeah. I guess he was.
But he's built like a brick shit house here, and Richter was like skinny and
yep.
And stuff.
He hasn't been seen.
I'm not saying it's not
that. That guy hasn't been seen since 2013's X-Factor number 259. A Brotherhood lineup containing these two former New Mutants couldn't seem like such a stretch considering who else might be on the team. And it shows a picture of Magma fighting with some cool stuff to talk about.
Magma.
Yes.
Magma.
Magma, yes.
Magma.
Unlike Pyro and Avalanche, Magma can't hide behind a mask. Unless Guggenheim's introducing another molten, fiery female mutant, this has to be ex-New Mutant Magma. Her inclusion in
Magma
in a Brotherhood roster is surprising, but it fits with Solicit saying there are former friends on the team. And if Magma's in charge of this Brotherhood, it's not far-fetched to think that the other similarly MIA New Mutants like Rusty and Richter could be involved too. It's also possible that Magma's gone for the big leagues and brought Pyro and Avalanche back from the dead for her evil lineup. If this is Magma, and it really seems like it is, it'll mark a major return for the character as she hasn't been seen in 3 years since the conclusion of Fearless Defenders. Now this other guy, Mask, there's a precedence for hooded characters showing up in Brotherhood lineups, meaning that this hooded foe is most likely Mask, a mutant with the ability to mold and reshape faces and bodies with a touch. He first debuted in 83 Uncanny X-Men number 169 as a member of the undergrad mutant group, the Morlocks. I remember this guy. He constantly challenged Callisto for leadership of the group and eventually came up to the surface as a member of Toad's Brotherhood. Mask and fellow Morlock Thorn joined the Brotherhood as part of an alliance between the Morlocks and the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. Although the alliance ended when Mask was seemingly killed and the Brotherhood was defeated by X-Force, Mask's death didn't last long and the character has popped up every few years since then and has not been seen. Was last seen in 2015, All New X-Men number 41, where he was invited to live at the X-Mansion alongside other forgotten mutants. Nothing came of that, and it looks like Mask is back to his villainous lays. Now, the guy behind it, they call it the Mystery Demon. There's also
his name is Cleavis. His name is Cleavis.
Cleavis. Okay, you heard it here first.
No, I stole it off of at the Marvel site, on Marvel's own site. They have an interview with Guggenheim on there, and
missed that. So who's
so that is Magma. That is Magma, and that is Mask. And for the moment, that's Pyro and Avalanche. But that's all we know about those two. And then the other guy is Cleavis.
So it says here,
it's not a slack-jawed yokel. Oh no, that's Cletus.
Oh, okay. There's also a mysterious demon creature in the background of the team shot. While there's a precedence for anthropomorphic elephants joining the Brotherhood, there really isn't for demon-y members. The creature's design has elements of classic X-Foes like the Brood, which is the first thing I thought. The demonic Nagari, the unnamed villain, even kind of looks like the former acolyte Mellencamp, whose mutant form was similarly demonic and green. Our odds are this is a totally new character, and it could be a character we already know, but a new form. That's always a possibility. Now, it says here that there's some Days of Future Past connection. It says, it's worth pointing out that this back to the basic approach, subtly harkens back to the original days of Future Past story, which took place in X-Men number 141 and 142 in 1981. The two-parter saw the X-Men, which included Kitty Pryde, Nightcrawler, Colossus, Storm, and Logan. Fight the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. It was also the debut of Mystique's Brotherhood, which included the first appearances of those characters. The 80s storyline also marked the debut of Rachel Gray. See, I didn't even think about that till just now. A character now starring in X-Men Gold. They tried to assassinate anti-mutant politician Senator Robert Kelly. In X-Men Gold number 1, the new Brotherhood attacks the United Nations following a flare-up of anti-mutant prejudice in the human population stirred by the TV news.
It was... Days of Future Past was like the next storyline right after the Phoenix Saga.
Yes, so it was
a big deal. I mean, it even started off with the Kitty Pryde in the Danger Room, and then passing out at the end when she got inhabited by her future self.
That's right, I remember that.
I do too.
Very good.
Haha.
Yes, very good.
But. Awesome. And then we're going to have Mesmero is also going to be in the storyline.
Mm, awesome. Very awesome.
Thank you. Thank you, Marvel.com.
Yes. So, that I enjoyed that for various reasons, which we've discussed already. What did you guys think?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good.
It really did remind me of the old days when I started reading things.
Now, Marie, you have not said whether you were ever an X-Men reader at any point.
I don't think I ever really was. I kind of picked up the book. I was like a hanger-on follower around the time just before they went to Australia, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So maybe... I think I picked up the Wizard of Oz issue in 175.
The Wizard of Oz issue, that's funny.
And kind of followed them for a little bit off and on, but I was never a really big X fan.
So the Excalibur years is when you at least were peripherally reading them, okay.
Yeah, now...
Yes, like there was only one, there was... X-Men, New Mutants, and I don't know if Excalibur was around at that point. Maybe.
Is it Australia time? Yes. Sorry.
So,
geeking out.
Speaking of Excalibur and New Mutants and all that, they have a thing in the back called the Road to X-Men Gold. I won't go through it all, but...
Yeah, please don't. Please don't. For God's sake, don't.
That's like... A ton of reading.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot because it
filled in... Look at those words.
Yeah, it filled in areas that after I quit and the things that had happened and what happened to people. And then it showed some stuff that I had already read. I picked up off and on over the years and what happened to people and everything. So I enjoyed it a lot. But speaking of all those characters, I've spoke on many occasions that the Marvel Epic Collections that they put out, and usually they do them at random and without any kind of rhyme or reason. And they've put out some number ones. So in the last few weeks, I've kind of picked up that they have the Epic Collection number one of the X-Men, not the Uncanny X-Men, but the X-Men. Is out, and I think it's called Genesis, maybe. They have put out, just recently released, the New Mutants Epic Collection number 1, which I purchased, and it's called Revival, and it has that graphic novel they first appeared in, plus, a good 12 issues. I should be actually looking this up so I can talk about it. And I picked that up as well. And they had... the Epic Collection of the first X-Factor team, which was the original X-Men. I have that as well. That has a good chunk of issues. So you can pick that up. And then most recently, I pre-ordered it once I saw it. They have the first volume of Excalibur. The great Captain Britain, Megan, and Rachel Gray, Kitty Pryde, and Nightcrawler collections out there as well. I have all of those. So if you're wanting to read some of that old stuff, and if you look in the right place, usually InStock Trades has them for 50% off, usually cheaper than Amazon. I usually check them both. Even with paying for shipping, they're cheaper than Amazon, and I have Amazon Prime, so that's saying something. So you're wanting to look at all that old stuff. I kind of, you know, I don't have a lot of that like I used to. Sold all that years ago. For example, you can get, oh, and they have Comixology versions. Like, for example, X-Factor Genesis and Apocalypse, as it's called. It has Avengers number 263, where one of the times Jean Grey was back to life. And Fantastic Four number 286. It's got X-Factor 1 through 9. And let's see, X-Factor Annual number 1, Iron Man Annual number 8, Amazing Spider-Man number 282, and material from Classic 8, X-Men 8 and 43.
This sales presentation brought to you by...
Yes, I wish I could get some... The thing now is, they passed a law in Missouri. Sales tax on internet sales. So, Amazon, I did have a thing where I could put post things and get kickbacks if people bought through those links, but... When Missouri started charging sales tax for that, they just said, okay, well, if you live in Missouri, you can't do that anymore. So I get nothing. But anyway, you want to read that kind of thing. That came out March, just last month. 1903 paper and a total of only $8.50 on Comixology. So if you want a big, huge collection of that kind of stuff of the old days, and I never did read the New Mutants, so I'm really looking forward to that. It is, the X-Factor one is 384 pages. It's huge. Cover price is usually $35 for those. So that's a pretty good thing. But I think you can get it for $20 on InStock Trades. So anyway, I probably will actually go through these little snippets and find the collections where these are, because I have some of these that I've never read and I would like to read that stuff again. So anyway, that's just me. I remember that X-Men, the Wolverine and Kitty Pryde series, that was awesome when she was made a ninja with Ogun and all that good stuff. Those were the days, man. Those are the days. They put out let's see, X-Men Epic Collection is, they got a lot of good stuff. I don't have all of them yet, but I have three out of the four. They just released one called, where is it? Second Genesis.
I think it's called The Reminiscence of Chris Mosby, reliving his days as a childhood fan of the X-Men.
The old days. Yes, you're absolutely right. Yeah, here it is. X-Men Epic Collection Second Genesis just came out. Actually, no, it isn't out yet. It's not out till the 11th. Take that back. In 2 days. Huge bunch of stuff. Even got some stuff from Iron Fist, number 14 and 15, back when the Misty Knight was had an apartment with the X-Men. Member Jean Grey. So they crossed over into each other's books. Anyway,
I gotta take my kid to go see Boss Baby here soon.
Okay, all right, I'll wrap it up. I don't know, man. It's just that and that Logan TV series, which I'm behind on. That show kicks ass. I don't know if you've watched it, but it's awesome.
You mean Legacy?
Yeah, whatever you want to call it. Yeah.
Or Legion. Legion.
Legion. Yes, it's Legion. That's a good show. Anyway, that's about it for this week, everybody. You guys have anything to say? Anything else? Anything? Okay, moving on.
Happy Easter.
Happy Easter. All right, let's see. As always, you can send an email to podcast@talesfromthelongbox.com and let us know what you think there. Or you can join us on the Facebook page. Well, we have one. And yeah, so things and stuff, and or you could comment on the actual episodes and let us know what you think there. So that is it for this week, and we are out.